passion. When I say passion, what does it make you think of? You can shout out phrases or things. Nothing? Energy. What else? Now I can't hear. Too many fan noises. You just have to shout it really loud. Love. Energy, love, strength. Excitement. All those are kind of bundled up into something, and they all carry with them this emotion. Sort of makes you think. I want to ask you some questions. You don't have to shout out answers to this, but they're just to think about, and then you can think about it throughout the sermon. When we get to a boring part of the sermon, you can keep thinking about that and then kind of come back in. But here's some questions for you. What makes you want to shout? Or what makes you feel so angry that you get overheated? What makes you want to sing? What really gets under your skin? What makes you feel like jumping up and down? What makes you laugh out loud? For anyone under the age of 25, what makes you LOL? And when you do any of those things, express any of the emotions that you feel, what makes you want to shout, who does it irritate the snot out of? There's the eye roll thing happening right there, right? In this morning's Bible reading, David danced. He danced with all his might, and Michal, one of his wives, was exceedingly irritated about it. How many times have you really wanted to give someone a piece of your mind? Think about the last time you really wanted to give someone a piece of your mind. Usually, not always, usually it happens when you're driving and someone has cut you off and you're experiencing the, I should have said it, should have rolled down my window at the right time, you had the perfect thing to say, and it's now 2 minutes later, and you think better of driving up next to them because you don't want to cause any trouble. I'm teaching Andrew, our 15-year-old, to drive because he's in driver's ed and everything. And we're going to the Naperville driver's facility for Excel, I think it is. It's over, you know where Fifth Avenue is in Naperville, right behind Naperville North High School? And you know that if you're going down, what is that road? Mill Street. Yeah, if you're going south on Mill Street, a lot of times the stoplight at Fifth Avenue causes a big backup of traffic and people stay in the right-hand lane and then try to inch into the left-hand lane so they can go straight. But the right-hand lane is just the perfect way to turn right, and that's the only thing you're supposed to do. And so Andrew was driving there, and I warned him. I said, one of these times, or several times, you're going to have a case where there's a person who is blocking all traffic, trying to get into the line of cars here, and you can't keep going to turn right. You're just stuck there. And so on this particular day, I was driving, and that's exactly what happened. And so I stopped and waited. And he said, well, honk your horn. And I said, and I taught, I don't know how many of you use your horns this way, but this is the way I use horns, and I think it's absolutely correct. When you're driving, if you are in a place where someone needs to know you're there and you don't want them to hit you, you honk your horn, right? It means, I'm here, please don't hit me. It doesn't mean, get out of my way, but we use our horns for get out of my way too often. So I used it as a teachable moment with Andrew and said that, no, really, it's just for I am here. And he said, well, you could say, I am here and get out of my way. And I said, no, I said, it doesn't do any good. We get road rage and stuff from that. So it was a good teachable moment. I'm not sure he quite understood it. He really wanted that person out of the way. And I just said, well, you know, we're just going to sit here. And maybe it has to do with personalities and everything. And I was just, how many of you are get out of my way, honk the horner? How many of you are, I'm here, honk the horner? How many of you don't like the horn at all? Except, now, do any of you do the little quick little two-honk thing as you leave the house? You know, beep, beep, see ya. You do that to say hello to somebody? Anyone do that? Just Jeff? Who else? Who's the honk the horn to say hello? I really like that, but just it's got to be very, very quiet. We should have two different horns in the car. We should have the get out of my way horn and the beep, beep, kind of Herbie horn or something like that. Oh. But I think that I irritated Andrew a little bit by being too calm, but I hope that I taught him a little bit. And he's not here today to defend himself, so I hope he's not listening now or I'm going to be in trouble. When you want to give someone a piece of your mind, and it does happen, not just in traffic, what do you do with that person who maybe you want to give a piece of your mind to, who makes your skin crawl, but they're respected and loved by everyone else? I really want to give them a piece of my mind, but I don't know if I can because I might get a "do you know who you're talking to" kind of a thing. They're too important. Maybe I should respect that person. Let me go a little deeper in today's reading. Michal had had enough with her husband David. Here's the story. And it was actually, she had had enough again. She had loved him as no one else had ever loved him. And she knew that for at least a time, he had loved her. David had been deeply in love with Michal. She had risked her own life to save him. She'd been torn from him and forced to marry somebody else. That's what happened. She was married to him, and then her dad said, "Nope, you're not married to him anymore. You're married to this person because we need some negotiations going on here." And David had not come to get her. After a long time, they finally had been able to get back together. They were married again, but it wasn't the same. She didn't think that David was at all grieved about the time that she was in the arms of another. After all, he wasted no time in marrying others and having children with them. David had several wives, not the example of biblical marriage that people want to talk about. It is an example of biblical marriage. David had several wives, but it was before we decided that the Bible only means what we think sometimes. You know, but that's what. But now they were back together. But instead of celebrating with her, David was out dancing nearly naked in front of everyone. You said it was a linen ephod or whatever it is. That's a thong. He was wearing a little tiny thong in front of everyone. Kids, you're going to ask your parents, "What? Isn't that the thing that goes on your foot?" Right? That's what we used to call thongs. We call them flip-flops now, but yeah, that's what David was wearing. And you can imagine Michal thinking, "Who does he think he is? I hate him, 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 I hate him so much." Today's reading conveniently skips the part that you alluded to, Janet, where Uzzah was struck dead after reaching out and touching the ark. Does anyone have their Bibles open and you're looking there? I love how you put it, "after an incident." Yeah, there was an incident. Listen to this. When they came to the threshing floor of Nacon, Uzzah reached out his hand to the ark and took hold of it, for the oxen shook it. The anger of the Lord was kindled against Uzzah, and God struck him there because he reached out his hand to the ark, and he died there beside the ark of God. David was angry because the Lord had burst forth with an outburst upon Uzzah, and so that place is forever called Perez Uzzah, which means God struck Uzzah to this day. David was afraid of the Lord that day. He said, "How can the ark of the Lord come into my care?" So David was unwilling to take the ark of the Lord into his care, into the city of David. Instead, David took it to the house of Obed-Edom the Gittite. The ark of the Lord remained in the house of Obed-Edom the Gittite for 3 months. And the Lord blessed Obed-Edom and all his household. It was told King David, "The Lord has blessed the household of Obed-Edom and all that belongs to him because of the ark of the Lord." All right, this part is not in there. It's in the Bible, but it's messed up. Some folks want to explain that it is a "don't mess around with God." He's like trying to fight a thunderstorm kind of passage. Or, "See, you have to respect God or you might get it." Or even less than that sometimes, "This passage ultimately shows how much awe the people of God's time had with respect to God's power. We need to rediscover that." And I think it's just messed up. David thought it was messed up. he called the place where Uzzah died Perez Uzzah. And I guess in a not so literal sense, but almost in a literal sense, the place where Uzzah was attacked, or something close to that. It's messed up. See, God is not a cosmic sheriff waiting for us to screw up so that God can just get us. In this passage, it's a great example of something in the Bible that it goes against the overall narrative of the Bible, which is God creates, we mess up, God does something good, we mess up, God does something good, we mess up. I've told you this before, what's God's job? Doing something good. What's our job? And we are really good at it. So this Bible story is there, but it's a messed up story. But it does express anger. It does that well. Reach out and touch the ark because it might fall to the ground if you don't steady it, and God will kill you. That's what's in that little part there. That'll make you think twice about agreeing to care for something like the ark. David got rid of it as quickly as he could. And then when things went well for Obed-Edom, David came back and got the ark and celebrated. And here's an aside within an aside for the sermon. Obed-Edom was a Gittite. There's another famous Gittite in the Bible who died young. Do you know who that Gittite is? His name is Goliath. Goliath was a Gittite. So David, slayer of Goliath, we could look at other Bible passages to say someone else named Elhanan, who might be David. There's all kind of fun Old Testament things that we could do with that. But Goliath was a Gittite. And Obed-Edom was a Gittite. So apparently he was big and strong enough to not get smote. Is that the right word? Smote by God if he did something with the ark? I don't know. But now back to some other anger. Michal's emotions are not, I would guess, much unlike many emotions that many of us have felt. Her anger and her disdain for someone who dances around as if they are all that in a bag of chips. I know they didn't have chips back then, but you get the idiom, right? It's likely similar to feelings any of us have had in situations where we feel exploited or manipulated by others. Now, taking God's unconditional love for all as a given, because I think we need to take God's unconditional love for all as a given. That's just, it's part of the baseline of our beliefs. Taking that as a given. How do you think it's possible to be reconciled to the ones we wish would simply go away and leave us alone? And then owning God's unconditional love and always possible reconciliation with any and all of God's children, how shall we celebrate? Because that's a big question. We don't know how we can be reconciled, but we know it's possible, or I hope we know it's possible, because God says it's possible. So how shall we celebrate? Sometimes we can celebrate in silence and reflection. It's a great way to celebrate. Sometimes we can celebrate with warm smiles and caring hugs. Sometimes we can celebrate with singing and clapping. Sometimes we can celebrate with laughter and high fives. And sometimes we can celebrate with dancing. And not just a little two-step or a dainty waltz. I know that that's dancing, but I mean really cutting loose and dancing with all our might. Dancing so that the next morning you're sore because of all the headbanging you were doing. How many of you have been there? Come on. The neck is sore right here. How many of you don't know what I'm talking about? Dancing that some people look at and get uncomfortable and angry. That's the kind of dancing that David was doing. That's the scene that Michal despised. Let me tell you, folks, we need to celebrate. At St. Paul's United Church of Christ in Downers Grove, we need to celebrate who we are and what we're about. You remember this? It wasn't too long ago that we adopted this statement.
Together we share the joy of discipleship and service to God with all who desire to join in the life of our church. God created each of us. As recipients of God's grace and love, unearned and freely given, we are called to love the Lord our God with all our heart, with all our soul, and with all our strength, and to love our neighbors as ourselves. We celebrate every person as a child of God, created in God's image. We welcome people of every age, economic status, ethnic origin, gender, marital status, mental and physical ability, political affiliation, and sexual orientation. Unashamed, boldly living out Christ's love. Unafraid, boldly living God's radical hospitality and extravagant welcome. Unapologetic, boldly sharing a story of God's freedom, acceptance, welcome, inclusion, mercy, community, compassion, celebration, and love. With all who agree, and when we feel loved, and yes, with all who disagree, and when we feel despised. Amen.